Today's episode is brought to you by Geico, because Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? And we all know the answer. Of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with the homeowner's, condo, or renter's coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. In fact, how easy is it, Gio?
Well, Chris, it's Geico easy.
It certainly is. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save. Hello and welcome to Cruella Classics for July 30th, 2022. We're going to play some highlights of the Adam Carolla Show with over 13 years of podcasting under that man's belt. So we got a lot of clips to choose from, and we're really excited to get this show going. My name is Chris Loxamana. I'm the executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Carolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you, Gio. Before we get going with these clips, I want to remind everybody, if there's a clip that you want to hear, a special moment from the Adam Carolla Show Pantheon, please let us know. Drop us a line. Email classics@adamcarolla.com or find us on Instagram, Facebook, wherever. There's ways to get a hold of us. Let us know what you want to hear. And let's get going with our first clip. We're going to take you all back to 2013, where Adam explains one of his more brilliant ideas, I think.
Yeah, this is one he hasn't really come back to at all. The Adam and Drew Show had a lot of this going on, but it came over to the Adam Carolla Show as well. This is from Adam Carolla Show 1003, so 1003, with featuring Eugene Meerman, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop. This one's January of 2013. This is right after they did episode 1000 with Ben Schwartz, amazing episode. Eugene, not in this portion, this is just about the penis-sized numbered windbreaker idea Adam had. And he just received one from a fan with his number ranking on the windbreaker. And it's hilarious. Hope you guys enjoy.
I was sent this jacket from Ed Milanowski. And, yeah. You know, my plan of my water displacement plan?
Yes.
I've said it a few times. I'd like to get every man in America to just put his engorged penis in a graduated cylinder, see how much water's displaced so we can do length and girth, and then you get a number signed to you and you have to put it on a windbreaker and wear it for, you know, calendar year.
It's your volume.
Yeah, it'd be fun. So I got a sweat jacket. By the way, evidently, I said there's about 120 million dudes who would have to participate
right.
in this.
Over, you know, 18.
Over 18 in male. According to the sweat jacket, there's 112.5 million. So that was a rough estimate. I was close enough. But anyway, I came in 23 million.
You put a number on the back.
116,305. So that's...
Hey, top 20%.
That's it.
Not
that's
bad.
Top 20. Not bad. And this is what it would look like. And people would walk around. And, you know, you'd see guys. You'd find a guy who was just a digit or two off. And you guys would have something to talk about.
Yes.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Although, would it be like that thing where, you know, when you find someone whose license plate is almost the same as yours and you get excited and they could care less?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you met the guy who's one more or less than you and he doesn't care?
He's probably sucking up to someone in double digits, pardon the pun. You know. And I'm talking up the ladies going, yeah, but you know that guy, he can't eat pussy for shit. He's riding on his cock. He gets by on his cock. You know what I mean? He literally rides on his cock. He uses it like a camel. Yeah. So I was sent this lovely, lovely sweat. And this is, again, it's my plan. It's the ranking. The ranking is it's not how much water you displace. It's how much you displace compared to every other American male and what rank you come in. And then we put that on the back of your jacket. It'd make for a fun year.
Really would. You would
not, for some guys.
Well, I know. Really fun year. You would not dread your trips to the DMV or the post office or what have you. It'd be kind of fun, right?
Yeah. Because you're going to see some guys there. It would make society a
game. Yeah. And it'd really be fun if there's any kind of reunions or any kind of, I'm going to catch up with my buddy Alex. He moved to New York 10 years ago. He's picking me up from the airport. Oh, I want to see what his number is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you headed this weekend? No, just meeting in the four-digit club.
Good times. Good times.
And that was the windbreaker idea based on penis size that Adam came up with. And that clip was from 2013. All right, let's get going with our next clip. We're going to now go back to 2012, and we're going to hear Adam with Chris Elliott. Now, Chris Elliott, what are some of your favorite roles?
Well, people who aren't comedy nerds would probably recognize him as a guy with a tiny hand who's gross, and he's the butler in Scary Movie 2. And then for people who aren't heathens, who understand comedy, go way back, David Letterman's earliest show, so I'm sure it's probably where Kimmel knows him best from. Mm. Everybody was a huge comedy nerd who liked that stuff. He was like a key player on that show, and akin to something you might have seen on like Conan with like his latter-day characters, like Coked Up Werewolf or something like that.
Right.
But this is actually a guy, and he would just play various characters and roles. A brief stint on SNL, Cabin Boy, Eagle Heart.
Captain Ron, right?
Captain Ron's Kurt Russell.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of Cabin Boy. Yeah, and something about
Dave Letterman
about
has
Mary.
A cameo in that. Yes, I'm talking about Mary. He is the guy who has a really bad case of like shingles or sores. He's stressed out. He has a much larger, enormous role in the movie than you might think. Woogie. That's a great bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's hilarious and everything. He's a comedy genius. He was promoting his autobiography at the time, and Adam finally got to interview him, and he was kind of nervous, and he was like honored, and then Chris Elliott was honored to talk to him too. So we split this up. It's just a one-on-one, part one and two. Two will air tomorrow in the Corolla Classics feed. Until then, here's part one, Adam Carolla Show, episode 931, featuring Chris Elliott, October of 2012, part one.
And welcome to the program. And it's an honor to speak with Chris Elliott.
Oh. Shouldn't be. It's an honor for me to speak with you. Thank you.
It's nice. It must be nice being you, because I think, well, maybe.
Why would you say that?
I'll tell you why. Why would you get so defensive about that?
Well, because that is the last thing that I would ever think, that it's nice being me.
Well, that's good. That means you still have your edge. The second you think it's great being you, then you stop being funny.
Well, I mean, I guess if your edge is, you know, suicidal, then I've got a suicidal edge.
It's the ultimate edge. I probably spent too much time in the company of Jimmy Kimmel, but, you know, Jimmy Kimmel... And it's kind of nice. It's better probably, I'm trying to think, in the American psyche, or at least the psyche of American comics, to be that guy who is, you know, you're not Johnny Carson and you're not Gallagher. You're this guy that's sort of you go in between, you take on different shapes, but you're just associated with funny. Like, Jimmy was a huge Letterman fan,
yep,
and thus a huge Chris Elliott fan. And I didn't even know what you did other than you were funny. Like, but that's the ultimate.
But that's still my act. I don't really know what I do either. And my hardcore fans, of which Jimmy is one, I don't think they could define it either.
Well, that's kind of nice because, you know, it's like, well, this guy does stand-up or this guy does a sitcom or this guy does a late-night show.
Right.
And then you have something you can wrap your mind around it. You're the Kaiser Sose of comedy. No one exactly knows what you do. You just appear, you make a fart joke, and you leave.
Right, right. Well, and the older I get, the more fart jokes I've been making, too.
It's not intentional.
It's a lot. Yeah,
it's exactly. Easier. No, I know. It's so weird. You go like, I'm getting up off the sofa and
right. And then that is my biggest fear in life, is just that, you know, I'm in an elevator and I just have no control. That's going to happen, right?
It's happening in its own small way. There's two things.
And what do you do? I know this is a bit stupid, but right. What do you do when that happens? Do you apologize?
I think
acknowledge it?
Well, first off, I think a man has to know his own limitations, as Clint Eastwood would say. Like, you have to first admit you don't have the asshole of a 19-year-old anymore.
Well, I'm not at that point yet. I can't admit that.
These mics aren't even hot. That's why we brought you here. You see your family in the next room. They're all gathered around the studio. You have to admit you can't. Your asshole can't turn somersaults like it used to.
I'm not there yet. This is going to be an intervention because I have the asshole of a 10-year-old right now, and I always will.
You think you have the ass of the tiger, but you don't. It's like this is when Muhammad Ali had someone had to tell him, "Listen, you're taking a beating. You're not the greatest anymore." You know, and So the first thing is you have to sort of admit you're getting older because you can't get away with, you know what, I'll just do that weird little thing where I put all the pressure on the ball of my right foot and pivot just a little bit. I'll sneak it out. No one's going to hear this.
Yeah.
Or I feel something coming on, but I can do a couple chin-ups in front of a nun. Don't worry. Nothing's going to happen. I mean, I don't know if that scenario is going to happen, you know, per se, but I'm just saying, you can't do it anymore.
Right.
Know your limitations.
I guess you're right. That's the first thing.
By the way, the name of the book Chris has out, The Guy Under the Sheets, an unauthorized biography. It's out. You can get it at Amazon. And as we ask, if you're going to go through Amazon, go to AdamCarolla.com, hit the Amazon banner, and put a little wind in the sails of the pirate ship here.
Speaking of wind.
Tell me how embarrassing this is. You know, there's a sort of double-edged sword of having a wife who has an attractive friend.
Yeah.
Because we all think, oh, it's nice when your wife has attractive friends, but then you realize you act
About a guy or a girl?
A girl.
Yeah.
Girl.
Okay.
You act a little bit differently, and you hold yourself to a little different standard and that kind of stuff. Like, if she's bringing over one of her schlubby friends and you're walking around in, you know, cut-off sweatpants, you don't change. But she's bringing over her hot friend, you kind of get it together a little bit. Not because you're having sex with her. There's any reason other than that's just how you're wired.
Right, right.
And my wife has an attractive blonde friend, and I was doing what I do, which is we're going to bring it back to my asshole in a second. I was skipping my rope, and I go upstairs. I have a sort of a weird workout room that has huge big windows that I just slide open, so it's just big screened in windows.
Right.
It's almost like a screened in porch sort of upstairs, and I just watch TV and I skip my rope.
That's great. How long do you do that for?
I go like 25 minutes.
That's
normally.
A lot. That's a lot.
But not for me because I've skipped rope for so long that I don't actually move.
But are you just doing like, you know, what you know,
not last
little
night,
kids
but the
did?
Night
or
before?
Are you doing like, you know?
I do the tricks and
you
stuff.
You do the whole tricks and stuff?
Yeah, I go fast, like what boxers do.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't burn that many calories because I'm not moving that fast. I mean,
You're moving your arms and stuff too.
It's good. And I'm up there and because I've been traveling with those big Bose sound-canceling headphones, I put those things on, I crank up the tunes, I block out the world. So now the tunes are cranking in my head. I'm watching the television. I'm listening to, like, you know, Mystery Achievement by the Pretenders, and I'm noticing as I'm going, I'm doing the fart on the down, you know, on the land, you know, sort of just a you know that right. one where you break it off into five or six pieces, little bite-sized morsels, and I'm letting it fly, and then at a certain point, I look to my right, and I see my wife and her attractive friend having a light beer out on the patio, looking up at me through the window, and I realized they've heard every single one of those.
Well, they probably just thought you had the bass cranked up or something.
Maybe
like
that was it.
It's just like
she's got one of those bazooka boxes.
Yeah,
up
exactly.
There.
But at least if she was up in your workout room, and you would have had that big sweat thing in your ass too, which would
I like that too. It is weird.
It is weird where you sweat now is a little different too than when you sweat.
My kids were in my room, in the workout room, while I was skipping my rope. I was wearing my like gray t-shirt. By the way, who decided that gray t-shirt the shirt that shows off the sweat more prominently than right. any other material
that's
should
that's
be the
uniform.
The universal workout material should be the one that shows off you pitting out more than anything else.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It doesn't drip off the gray shirts. It just sits there.
It's weird because
and then sometimes it gets that sort of if it's on there and the outside of the stain starts mm-hmm. to dry a little, it gets mm-hmm. a little yellow on the
yeah.
outside,
yeah.
and then it's really dark on the
yeah,
center.
Yeah, like it's a little salty on the
yeah,
outside.
Yeah, it gets right. That's
yeah,
salt.
But it's so weird because a black t-shirt you can get away with,
right?
A
right.
white t-shirt. Nothing, yeah. but you don't work out in a white t-shirt, and you don't work out in a black t-shirt. You work out in that gray t-shirt, and that shows
everything. They
should everything.
Come out with clear t-shirts. Just
that would
completely
be
clear.
Yeah, but seeing your areolas while you're bouncing up and down farting.
Well, if it was a tight shirt, it would keep it, it would
oh,
be like
keep
a
it
bra.
Place. Yeah.
yeah,
sports clear shirt. Write that down. So I was sweating away, skipping my rope, and between my tit sweat
right.
and my belly sweat,
right.
I had formed Mickey Mouse's head on my belly, and my kids
well,
were
she
like,
"She would have thought that was cute."
My daughter was like, "You got Mickey's head. You got Mickey's sweat head on your belly, Daddy."
And you told her you got that at Disneyland. That shirt,
yeah. It's weird, yeah, because yeah, it used to just be a little sweat in the pits, a little sweat on the brow, and now it's ass
no,
sweat,
I hate
and
it.
Lip
it's,
sweat.
It's everything. It's also just hair is like really gross to me. And I know the big thing now is that all the, you know, everybody's like shaving everything.
Right.
Like, you know, guys are, you know, it's like, you know, that is that just like a cleanliness thing, like the chicks like that now, that guys just are shaved everywhere and anuses are bleached and everything is like, you know, pure and perfect. I go, you know, my wife and I, we live, you know, in this house by ourselves right now.
Sure.
And I go for a long time before I realize that I just have all this stuff coming out of my ears, out of my nose. You know,
yeah.
like suddenly I have to do Letterman and my wife says, well, you're going to clean up for that. And I go, yeah, I'm going to take a shower and stuff. And then I go up and realize, no, I've got like,
yeah.
you know, a month's worth of work to do.
It's a
manscaping.
Combination of the eyesight dimming down a little bit. And
that's definitely true.
And the ear and the nose hair ratcheting it up.
It's also just not wanting to see it, though, with
yeah.
me. It's like
yeah,
me
I
just
don't.
Kind of... You know, squinting in the mirror going, okay, it's close. It looks good enough.
Well, the thing that's going on, I really do think with all the manscaping and all this stuff, men and women, I really think the porn industry is driving the hygiene and hair removal and all that. Much like, you know, remember like Madonna would
right.
affect the dress of the young girls
right.
or, Jennifer Aniston's hairdo on Friends would when like,
did the
push things.
When did the porn industry start thinking that was?
Well,
because it used to be Ron Jeremy and stuff. They were,
I know.
They were just,
but they
you know,
started with the
Planet
you know,
of the Apes.
You know, it started, you know, when some guy showed up to the porn set and they were like, hey, Stu, have you waxed your balls and bleached your anus? Because we're going to have a camera up there. Well, they probably
yeah.
use their real names, you know,
yeah.
when they're not. When
right.
they're not. By the way, Sir Duke LaCrosse. Duke LaCrosse is my porn name, by the way.
That's
Colonel
great.
Colonel Duke LaCrosse is my
That's
porn
perfect.
Name.
That's
yeah.
great.
So I think we've seen enough porn, and we've decided that this is the high water mark for fucking and being naked.
Right.
Like, this is the benchmark. Like, you
right.
can't do any better than this.
Right.
So, thus, we should emulate that. And that's why all the Jersey Shore guys look like porn guys now,
right,
too. It's
right.
all stripped and tanned and
yeah.
balls
yeah.
waxed and all that.
That's true. Maybe it came from that. I'm so out of it. I'll be honest, Adam. I don't watch a lot of porn. And
right,
you
time,
know,
it's time to wrap this up.
to
you
got to
leave. The name of the
I
book
thought, I thought
is
it like,
yeah, the guy under the sheets.
I mean, I thought the
Amazon.
Whole hairless thing was like, you know, an alien thing. You know, everybody loves these alien shows.
Oh, it's
on
true.
A&E,
no one has
so
hair.
I thought, you know, oh, okay, it's like the man who fell to Earth. It's David.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, we're all supposed to be this sort of asexual. Not, you know, we're all one thing. Now,
right.
You know,
that is kind of the. it's an interesting point, which is the things that will be missing in the future, like according to television and Hollywood, is hair and denim. Those are the two things that aren't going to make the cut. And I feel like they've been around for a while.
Right.
Like, what if you'd made an alien movie 200 years ago? You'd be dead wrong with the hair and the denim.
Right, exactly.
We've doubled down on the denim and the hair.
What is happening with denim? Why is that going away? I don't get that.
I think that's
part of me getting older, too. I still want to go in and think like I'm buying the shit that I bought when I was in high school, and I can't find it anymore.
I don't think denim will ever go away. That's my point.
But it's all brushed now.
Well, the problem is this. They got greedy with the denim, and they started stonewashing it in the 80s, and then everyone started making fun of the people and the pictures of the stonewashed denim, and then people went, fuck it, I'm not going to take a chance on denim.
Right.
Someone's going to take a picture of me, and then in 20 years, I'm going to be embarrassed again.
But you wanted that stuff when it came out. I mean, I remember when that stuff came out, I thought, oh, this is a revolution. Because this is like, I hated denim. the fucking new denim.
You had to break it in for a couple of weeks
before you felt semi-comfortable
in
it.
That's a power move, by the way. Like, you know, if you're really well-to-do, you'd have a guy break in your shoes for you. Breaking in your jeans would be nice.
Yeah.
Manuel, no farting. And right, keep walking. Right.
No, don't stop. That's part of it. That actually adds to the price.
Double down on the gas,
double
Manuel.
Double down on the crotch rot in the jeans for me, if you would.
The book, I've just seen it for the first time today, is how would you describe it?
It's an unauthorized autobiography.
Oh, sorry.
It's kind of like if Kitty Kelly had written an unauthorized biography of me. It's kind of a snarky look at my life, and because I couldn't get anybody else to write it, I wrote it myself. And it's a lot of made up crap, and then some real stuff too. There's some real things.
Give us some real from the book.
I did meet Dave Letterman when I was a tour guide at Rockefeller Center up on the observation deck at Radio City Music Hall. In the RCA building. He came with his mother, and I charged him the kiddie fare as a joke, and he laughed at that. But then in the book, there's a scene that didn't take place, which is me trying to impress him by doing my John Wayne Gacy impersonation. Making myself throw up and doing stuff like that I thought he'd find funny.
Can we talk about Letterman for a moment?
Yeah.
I feel like you know. I know a lot of guys who know Letterman and I feel like he's iconic and therefore loved. But I'm not sure if he's a great guy or just a great late night show host. And I'm all right with the separation part. Like where I go, Look, Woody Allen, Wagner, you know, they were good at what they did.
Right. I don't know if it's so weird that you say that, because I do, like, think of Woody Allen a lot, and I do think of Wagner a lot, and I feel guilty because I like Wagner music.
Yeah.
But and Woody Allen, too, it's kind of creepy, you know,
yeah.
But
right.
He's
so
brilliant.
But I'm able, but now we do this thing where it's like, we're all fans of, you know, you pick your team. And if your team is the Steelers, you're like Roethlisberger's not a rapist,
right?
A chick shouldn't have been wearing a short skirt, you know. And she had too many wine coolers, and that
right.
he was, you know. Right. And so it's like
you cut him some slack.
But my feeling is this: you're allowed to root for your team,
right?
And you're allowed to say this guy is a great quarterback,
mm-hmm.
but maybe off the field,
right.
not a fantastic individual. That's all right. You're not hanging with him. You're watching him play football. So I'm saying I always try to figure out with Letterman. So I always hear good stories, mm-hmm. then I hear kind of scary stories, and then everyone ultimately says with Letterman, oh, he's more miserable than you'll ever be. And I go, all right, but does that give him the right to be sort of douchey off camera?
The thing about Dave, and I am not particularly close to Dave right now. I don't see him. I did his show last night, and he was so sweet to me on the air, and he was so gracious and all that, and I hadn't seen him for a year, I think. I knew him a little bit more when the show first started because it was a small group of people, and there was more access to him. But as the show became popular, and as the staff grew, as the show grew, and then it turned into late show, not from late night, and he went over to CBS, you know, the inevitable, I think,
happened. I mean, he did have to suddenly become this other sort of person to a degree. I don't think he made a conscious decision to become that. I think it's the product of being this huge star. I mean, Johnny Carson, the same thing.
Well, yeah, and you end up taking the office upstairs and sort of locking yourself
in. Well, I always said there was a moment or a point when I couldn't just walk into Dave's office, and when it became sort of the Oval Office where you had to go through, you know, some you know, gauntlet of assistance to get to him. But that, you know, and maybe I resented that, I think, when I said that. But in retrospect, the more I think about it, I would probably be the same way, you know, if the thing happened to me. If it had ever happened to me.
Does it have to go that way? Like, I understand it has to go that way to a certain degree. You can't be
the person you were before.
But how far does it have to go?
Well, I think you have to be a type of person
for
that to happen. You know, I do think Jimmy is different.
Jimmy's
completely
different.
And he works off a different, you know, energy that way too, you know. But Dave, In terms of, was he a good guy or a bad guy? I think he'll go down in history as being a good guy. He has friends that he's very loyal to.
Right.
And you know, the douchey aspect of it, to me, if there is any aspect of that, I would say that just comes with the pressure of the job that he's doing. And everybody deals with that in different ways.
Douchey, probably not the right description. What I mean is, I don't know, reclusive sort of. You know, our friend Daniel Kellison worked there for many years.
Yep.
And when I did Letterman, he wanted to go up and say hi, but he was literally scared to go up and say hi.
Yeah.
And Daniel will go up and say hi to a hyena with AIDS.
Right.
You know,
no, I know.
Wearing like a pork chop vest.
You know, it was weird just then because my mind wandered a little bit while you were talking, and then I heard hyena with AIDS. And it just snapped me back to
reality.
Thank you.
That's how I get people back. I've got to go to the hospital. There's a lot of people in comas they're going to bring back.
It was only like 3 seconds that I was starting to think, you know, oh, fuck, what am I going to get at the hotel when I go home?
But he was scared. He was apprehensive.
Well,
he didn't
want
to do it.
I know that feeling, and I'm sure there are other staff members there. I don't know. I think there's a positive side to that, too, and something that helps the show, too. I think it's good that Dave is this, you know, this figure that's, you know, not particularly accessible, and that, you know, maybe you are a little afraid of him a little bit. I think that helps a little bit with what the show is. I don't know. I haven't worked on that show since, you know, the 80s. Dave has always been great to me, and he is – the thing about him is he instills this loyalty. You know, you want to be loyal to him.
Right.
And I think Jimmy is the same way in that sense.
Absolutely.
I feel the same way to Jimmy. Jimmy's always been great to me.
I do think that almost all leaders,
right,
good or bad,
right,
like even the ones that are into ethnic cleansing.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying Jimmy's in it for all.
Right.
You know, some ethnicities, but
sure,
not certainly
sure.
Not,
no,
not all of them.
I
don't want to paint that picture.
No, don't.
But,
no,
I mean, there's some what he calls troublemakers,
right,
but that's a couple, you know, gypsies, gays, Jews, outsiders.
Right.
But, you know, you wouldn't notice the difference. But the point is this. Yes, these guys always create this sense of you can
it's
take
an aura.
Yeah, it's basically it's like a Mexican drug cartel. You want this, it's silver or lead.
Right.
It's basically the deal. But the good news is you don't have to chop anyone's head off and put it in a duffel bag.
Right,
just take the silver.
Right.
It's like you're like a cop who's going to take the silver, going to take the bribe. It's basically the silver or lead thing is if you're a cop and you're working in Tijuana, take our money.
Right.
We're a drug cartel, or you're going to get a bullet. So it's take the silver or get the lead. Now, the good news is with guys like Jimmy is you're a cop, and it's okay to take the silver.
Right, right.
So why
right.
would you – and I've seen people, and you've probably seen it too, choose to take the lead.
Oh, sure.
And you're like, why are you fucking with Pablo?
But the
that's what I call Jimmy.
The thing about – I mean, you hear about like Patton, George Patton, how people, you know, everybody was scared of him, but his, you know, his troops would go anywhere for him and do anything for him.
No, you need
you
luck.
Know? I'm not saying that Dave works on that level, that people are so scared of him that that's why they're, doing a good job at his show. But I think there is a nice mix there of you're doing a comedy show, but then there's also this sort of a little underlying tension that's going on there.
Yes.
That actually, I think, keeps things in line to a degree for him.
Yeah.
That's not the same for Jimmy. They're two different guys.
No, I think the through line, though, for people who get to that position and who strive to get to that position, you know, not everyone wants that. You know, people say, well, it's everyone's dream to host this or play shortstop for the Yankees. No, it isn't. It's a lot of people's nightmare because they don't want that kind of pressure on a daily basis.
Right.
You know what it's like to just go back in your living room and watch your nasal hairs grow for a week and not have to fucking deal with putting on makeup every day and all that stuff. But for the guys who want that, it is you're for me or you're against me.
Yeah.
And I will be your best friend, your best ally, the most generous guy you've ever met, or
your worst nightmare.
Your worst nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
And the good news is, at least with Jimmy, and I suspect this way with Dave too, it's easy to be their friend.
Right.
So why take the lead?
Right. Right.
But you will get the lead if you choose that path.
Yeah. And there may be times when you get the lead when you didn't choose it either. When
it just
happens to come out of the blue.
Super shitty email.
I think that is what people are, you know. I think that's where the fear, where the Daniel Kellison fear comes from.
That happens. Everyone's going to get a little, what we call, you know, a little friendly fire. Maybe
when
a little.
I worked for Dave, there were like three times when we had like a fight. And it was like the most traumatic experience for me.
Oh yeah.
The opposite, however, you know, when you did a piece, when I would do a piece, especially like on a Friday night and I had the weekend ahead of me and it went well and Dave came by and just, you know, gave me a thumbs up or just, I don't know if that went well tonight, you know, walk by, I would be high, you know, literally high for, you know, days.
Was there any hanging out offset?
Well, you know, early on, I think there was with Dave. Again, you know, after the show started to build, he couldn't do that. But I remember like the first week of the of late night when it went on the air, I was a runner.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me the job of answering the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fucking around and just like, you know, answering it rawhide instead of late night.
Sure.
And Dave heard that and laughed at it.
Right.
You know, walked by. And he said, you know, let's go out. He was staying at some hotel with Meryl Marco. They hadn't moved into any house yet. And he said, and it was near where I was still living with my parents. And he said, let's go out for breakfast.
Now, how old were you at the time?
21.
And what do you, wow.
And I thought he was joking, though. I thought, oh, okay, yeah, I'll meet you. And he said, no, be at the diner at 9 o'clock. We'll have breakfast. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then I remember that day being on the phones, and he walked by with Meryl and said, so we're going to see you tomorrow, right? And I was like, yeah, okay. And I went home that night, and I did not know if he was serious or not. I suspected he was joking. He was fucking with me. But just to be on the safe side, I showed up at the diner, and like 9:15 came and went, and I was about to leave, and then he walked in the door, and we sat down, and we had breakfast, and then he walked me back to, you know, my home with my mom and dad.
Did you guys talk comedy? Was he saying you got it?
He was a fan of my dad's, so I guess there was some talk about that. It was mostly just commenting on the omelets that we were having and, you know, the stupid looking waiters and, you know, look at that person over there, you know, and
so
that
it was
kind of
really
stuff.
There was no business to it. It was just
It was totally social. And there were a couple of times when we would go out to dinner, you know, with Barbara Gaines and Hal Gurney and me and Meryl Marco.
Hal Gurney, by the way, is just salt of the earth.
Hal Gurney was like sort of the grandfather.
Yeah,
there,
the early years when
like
Dave would say, Hal, roll that clip, or Hal, where's that thing? That's Hal Gurney, who's 90 years old now, 88.
I guess he's probably pushing that, but still in great shape.
Stout,
jumps rope. Sweats.
Smarts, jumps rope. Oh, hell of a woodworker, by the way.
Yeah.
I swear to you.
Is he? Is Hal a woodworker?
Yeah.
I don't remember
Hal used to come out here and direct bits for the Man Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, because Jimmy was like, Hal Gurney from Late Night? Hell yeah, get him out here.
Right.
And Hal and I hung out a lot, and we just talk about woodworking and, you know, oscillating spindle sanders and things like that. And he was just a very, you know, it was funny because Hal was a guy who has, like, quiet wisdom.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, he's not up in your face.
Right.
But he just sort of quietly says things.
Right.
And I don't know why this stuck with me, but I had him over to my house just a couple of years ago when he was in town, kind of thing. You know, stay in touch, talk about wood.
Mm-hmm.
And
that sounds exciting.
He came into my house, and I have a view on the backside of my house, and there's a neighbor that's down the hill that has big trees that kind of, they don't block the view, but I always wish I could just sort of cap them off, just sort of mm-hmm. lop off the top so I could have the full view.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always kind of bothered me, and I've always wondered, should I go down there and pay for it or talk to him? I've never gotten around to it, but every time I look out, I see these trees. They're off in the distance. They're 100, 200 feet off, and they're not blocking the view, but I wish they were gone.
Right. They're bugging you.
Yeah. Hal comes in. He stands there. He looks out the back window, and he goes, I like those trees there. They offer perspective.
Oh, that's a nice new perspective
and I went,
it.
Yeah, they do. And then all of a sudden, I felt good about the trees.
Right.
And that was it. And that was like kind of how Hal is. You know, he just kind of offers his little wisdom.
Yeah, that just reminded me of something he said to me when I was first starting out at Letterman doing bits and coming out. He just like quietly said to me, you know, what really works well is just to pause a little bit before an entrance. I've always noticed that. It gets the audience more in tune to you coming out. And I realized he was right that as soon as you're introduced, don't run out.
Right.
Wait, give it a couple of beats and then come out.
Right.
And it was like the first piece of like show business advice that anybody had ever given me. And he gave it in like he was just thinking about it himself. But I know he was telling me, oh, my entrance would be better if I just, you know, delayed it like 3 seconds.
He gives advice like he's talking to himself.
Right, right.
But he does it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was a big supporter of mine. He used to, he loved to, turn me on to things like Jacques Tati, who I never really got into, but Hal was a huge fan of his. And
don't know who he is.
Like a French sort of Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, really?
He sort of thought I guess physically was mm-hmm. doing stuff like that at Letterman, and he thought I would get a kick out of that. And so we would have these movie nights after the show at late night where, you know, he would bring in this film and we'd all watch it and stuff.
What an exciting, extraordinary time for you, because
it was it does sound I don't know, cliche, but it was like my favorite year for me. That was just those years there were the best years of my life.
Well, not only are you young, but you have this sense, and it's kind of fun. It's a double-edged sword, that sense of I don't know what the next day holds.
Yes.
Now, you know, it's more nasal hair.
Exactly. I mean, there's too many answers out there now.
Now it's like, well, I got insurance. Everything's insured.
I mean, that's the same with
like
a marriage, too. It's
you
have to like, you know, you think back on when it was all a mystery, when you weren't thinking, you know, you had no idea what was coming next.
Someone would invite you to a party and you'd be like, I wonder if there are going to be chicks there.
Right.
Are there any chicks?
Right.
There's chicks. There's going to be another sausage fest because I don't want to blow another guy. There's got to be, I mean, not me, but you know what I'm saying.
Right. No, I understand.
Yeah. So there's that feeling of this is exciting. This is new. What's next? And as far as like the money goes, I got enough, you know, and
well,
who needs it?
Well, it was great money. I mean, when I was made a writer at Late Night, and I was pretty young when that happened, too.
Now, how did you go? And by the way, sit on that for 1 second. I want to give a little love to one of our sponsors.
Oh, this would be nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we'll tease that story.
And I'm supposed to be quiet? While you do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you okay. Jump. No, you can jump in.
I can jump right in.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Lending Tree. I don't know if you felt that, but you need that extra money in your pocket? It's not too late to start. Holidays are coming around. Got to buy that turkey, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff it with singles.
Ooh,
that's what I do.
With your fist full of singles.
Fist full of singles. One of the best Clint Eastwood movies ever made. Lending Tree can help. Mortgage rates are at historic lows, by the way. 3.125% APR, by the way. So you refinance your house or your cabin in the woods where Chris lives and save hundreds a month. Try LendingTree.com. So go to TryLendingTree.com. Oh, that is TryLendingTree.com. Yep. Complete the one easy form, and their network of over 200 lenders will compete for your business. That's what I like.
That sounds like fun.
They compete for your business.
That's exciting.
Let the banks. It's
like a game show.
Yeah. Like if it'd be like if 200 Mr. Mooneys. From the Lucille Ball show.
Lucille Ball.
That would be a really weird matrix.
It would be scary.
All those if Mr. Moonies.
200 Mr. Moonies. Okay. 100 Mr. Moonies and 100 Mr. Drysdales were all competing for your account. Could you imagine the utopia? Lending Tree. It's free. It's easy. And you can be confident in the lender you choose. So. Compare offers for up to four lenders within just minutes. Enter my code ACE for free mortgage guide. Unbelievable time we're leaving.
How long does this go on? It's like an infomercial. Go on. How much more do you have?
This is goddamn entertaining.
All right, I gotcha.
This is content,
right
my
now.
Friend.
Click, click,
oh,
click.
Oh, please, please. I'm putting my own flavor on this spot. Are you telling me that Mr. Mooney wasn't gold?
No, you're giving it a spin.
The
you're
Matrix
putting a little
Mooney?
Edge on it. No, I think I'm giving you a little help here. I'm doing something, right? I'm giving you a little something-something to give it a little spice.
I was going to bring it home yesterday, but you had to jump in. All right. All right. Come on, why didn't you punch that up, Chris?
Well, I didn't understand what you meant when you said Dawson. Like, Richard Dawson.
You're right.
Is there like a memorial thing going
on here today?
Or?
Yeah, I know. And it's sad because he finally died, and he was always at the top of my is he dead or is he alive list because nobody could ever.
You can keep him on it. I'm sure he's still
on it.
You're
right. Keep him on it. You know what? I mean, why should we remove?
Because most of those people on those lists, they're alive. So you need a few dead people on that list to have that answer.
Yeah, I just rounded it out. Thank you. Chris Elliott. In with us.
Today's episode is brought to you by BlindsGalore.com. For 20 years, BlindsGalore.com has made it easy to get custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. They're hand-built from scratch, created just for your windows, and delivered right to your door. And you can do it all from home. Just take the measurements and customize it online. Order up to 15 free samples, or you can use their online builder to see your shades on your screen. Blinds Galore's experts will help every step of the way, either online or over the phone, and they have over 2 million windows covered. And some of those windows are owned by Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew, who, when I've been over to their house, have showed me their Blinds Galore blinds, and they look so good. Whether you need more privacy to sleep in, to cool down, or just fix up a room, Blinds Galore has what you're looking for, and we got a great deal for you. Tell them about it, Gio.
Get the designer blinds and shades you've always wanted without the designer price at BlindsGalore.com. That's BlindsGalore.com.
And that was Chris Elliott hanging out with Adam Carolla back in 2012.
Comedy genius. One of the funniest guys on the planet.
Yeah, I love every character that he plays. All right, let's get going with our next clip. We're going to stay in 2012. We're going to go back about a month to hear an episode with Allison and Brian, and then Graham Parker might make an appearance.
Adam Carolla show up, so 9:43. It's the debut appearance of Graham Parker. Adam Carolla at this time had wanted to meet him for over 30 years. Allison Rosen on news, Brian Bishop sound effects. This is going to be part one. We're going to play part two tomorrow, also in the Carolla Classics feed. This one's from October of 2012 as well. Check it out. Hope you guys enjoy it.
I'm officially excited. Graham Parker finally coming in studio. We'll bring him in a couple of few. Good day, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
And good day, Bald Brian.
Oh,
the fan.
A little hot.
Yeah, a little hot. But not with that fan on. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, Graham Parker coming in. And it just, for me, there's a couple reasons. Or there are, I guess, what you call perks. Perks for being in this business, and it's getting to meet people whose work you really enjoy. And I've met a few of my idols over the years, but I've never met Graham Parker. I met John Hyatt many years ago, and I got him just booked onto Loveline at some point. And then I went and saw him do a show, And it was the greatest moment of my life because...
Was it Loveline? Because he was on the radio show for sure, the morning show. Was it both?
It was Loveline first, and he was doing a song called Slow Turning. And you might have it somewhere, one of his few hits. Although, see, to me, I know 150 Graham Parker songs and 150 John Hyatt songs, and I love them all, but they've never, no human being has ever heard them. And it always drives, it's what I do at night. This is Slow Turning. I get a little buzzed, and then I force Lynette to listen to Graham Parker songs, and then she always makes the mistake of saying... she makes the mistake of saying, wow, this is a really good song. How come I've never heard this song? And I go, because you have to fucking hear Maneater. Because you have to hear Maneater for the 26,000th time. That's why you can't hear this song. No human ears should hear this song, because you have to hear fucking Maneater or Witchy Woman again. But... I get, you can leave it on, I get Hyatt in, and I'm kissing his ass and just telling him, I was in high school and I was a huge John Hyatt fan, and no one knew who John Hyatt was, and I saw Graham Parker and John Hyatt together at the Greek in probably 1981 or something like that. So Hyatt's got a good sense of humor, and he's written a lot of songs for Bonnie Raitt and a lot of soundtracks and done all right for himself in Nashville and really good in concert. And he invites me to the concert that night. So I go out to the concert that night, and we're standing at the El Rey Theater over there on Wilshire Boulevard, right by the old, oh, keep it going. And he's up on stage and he's singing this song. And I'm just in the audience, just jumping up and down with my beer buzz, like enjoying myself. And
on Lynette's shoulders.
On Lynette's shoulders. I got my top pulled over my head.
Yeah.
And he comes into this part right here.
Now I'm in my car. Ooh, I got the radio down.
Because I got the radio down, and then he goes, where's Drew? Where's Adam on the radio? Like he said. He's screaming. He's like, and I'm listening to Adam Carolla on the radio, and I'm like, ah! I was like, because I was fucking cleaning carpets and listening to this in my Walkman, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he's up there screaming my name when he's got the radio on in his car. And, you know, for him, he has a sense of humor, and he just did Loveline the night before. So he goes into, like, a little riff where he's like, Adam, where are you, Adam? Drew, where are you? I need some help, you know? And I'm like, but I'm going insane because...
I'm here, John. I'm here.
I'm here, buddy. I'm crying. So you can pot it down. Not too much. So here I am, and... You know, for me, it's not just that I was fans of these guys, but I was... You can bring it down a little more, Brian. I was living in a garage and cleaning carpets and had a fucking shitty life and a shitty job and a shitty everything. And you know, when you're depressed and you're poor and everything looks like just 10 miles of hell out in front of you. And not only did the immediate future look pretty grim and bleak for me, the life, you know, the horizon looked pretty fucking horrible, too, because I was like, people, we don't talk about it that much, but worst economy, as bad as it is now, and actually worse, it was 1982, 83, no jobs to be found, parents lackluster, meets doesn't give a shit, meets we have no money, meets I don't know anyone who has a union job and can get you into doing construction.
Fashions are terrible.
Meets bad fashion, meets a bunch of friends who have the same parents as I do with no money, and all of us just sort of sitting around. And I would just, meets no girlfriend, meets it's hotter and shit, and I have no air conditioning. And I would just sit around and listen to Graham Parker and John Hyatt. It would make me feel better. Sometimes, depending on what the song was, it'd make me feel great or bad or whatever. But all those things that songs bring out. And for me to be in a position later on in life, much like probably the same feeling the first time that Jimmy felt the first time he went fly fishing with Huey Lewis.
And a little bit less the second time, and a little bit less the third time, and
yes,
by the ninth or tenth time.
What, does he have a standing fly fishing date with Huey Lewis?
They do a lot of fly fishing, and then it's funny, if you pan over just 20 feet to the right, you see the news.
You like Huey Lewis on the news?
Still wearing the suits, heads bowed, standing in the water. Huey forbids them from participating, but he still wants them there.
In unison.
Now, just sitting heads down.
They're not allowed to fish.
They're not allowed to fish. More fish for Huey.
Yeah.
And Jimmy.
He's the alpha male.
Yep. Jimmy tweeted me a picture, or tweeted me. He sent me a, you know, text. Instant message, text, a picture up on the raised rail that I talked about in New York that was so cool. I was talking about this on the show.
The High Line?
Yeah, the High Line. I never come up with the right name. Me and Phil Rosenthal, I told you, walked up on it and walked all around, so halfway through the city with it. And everyone I talked, it was one of those things where I got back to L.A. and I was saying to everybody, hey, you got to check out this High Line. And they're like, huh? And
yeah,
they're all from there. And they're like, what?
It snuck up on everyone. Because I used to live there and I wasn't even aware that it had opened until we went back.
So he texts. Dyed me a nice picture of him and Molly up on the High Line, which I thought was sweet. All right. So,
so do you have a recording of him talking about you? Because if not, you should put it out there via this podcast in case anyone happens to have a bootleg or anything, because that'd be so cool.
Of who? What?
Of John Hiatt singing your name.
Oh, wow. It would have been, this would have been like 98 or something. It was probably pre everyone had a phone and a whatever. But yeah, if somebody has it.
But that was prime time for like Dave Matthews Band and those types of bands whose fans were, you know, the recording off the soundboard thing was very popular.
I will be more. Okay, listen, I bullshitted you. He never did it. I didn't go to the show. He held out Man Cow. God damn it. You painted me into a corner. What was I supposed to say?
Damn it. I did not
so uncomfortable.
You changed the lyrics. I'm listening
Grease
to
Man
Cow in the morning.
Shmeggy, shmeggy with the Grease Man. So, all right. A couple nice moves. Was able to took my kids out for a nice walk. Of course, my daughter announced she had to take a pee as soon as we got to the top of the hill. And I said, you know, fool me once. Shame on me. No, you. And I said, listen, and she's, Daddy, help me. And I said, I got to figure the angle out this time because I can't have any more pissing into the boots, you know?
Yeah. You got to fold her up and hold her like a machine gun.
Oh,
that's
the thought about that. But I was trying to, I was trying to get her. I need to be a little heated up here. Yeah. I need to get her away from me, but I figured out she did the whiz thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good thing. Then we got this whole system worked out. We're about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, 12:30. I come up there, wake her up, pick her up, put her on the pot, get her all cleaned out, squeeze her, wring her out over the pot, and then put her back in the bed. Not been wetting herself. Last night, 11:30, went up to pick her up.
Uh-oh.
Felt a nice big warm patch of water right where she was.
And that's not water.
No, it was, but now. It's not. And I did the right thing. Called the wife. Said, take care of this. She took care of it. And I don't know what the system is anymore because I don't know. It was an hour earlier than I went the night before, and she'd whizzed all over herself. Speaking of whiz.
She's getting ready for the time change.
Ooh. Is that coming?
Mm-hmm.
Always catch me by surprise. Either I don't care or I'm really stupid or a combination of both, which is volatile.
Well, can't you know what
I
mean?
I think it is. My son was explaining that he was bullied at school. And I said, well, what do you mean bullied at school? Like how? First off, I know there's no bullying. There's no real bullying that goes on. And he's like, yeah, I was bullied. And I said, well, now what happened? And he said, well, I was telling a story. And Buddy Hinton, or whatever the bully's name was.
It's a very 40s name.
Yeah, I think that was the bully's name. The bully's name from the Brady Bunch, I think, was Buddy Hinton. But anyway, it's back when, you know, when they take husky white guys, put a butch haircut on them.
And his friend Lampwick.
Yes. Buddy Hinton was Brady Bunch. So I said, well, Sonny, what happened? What kind of bullying? I don't see any marks on you. What happened with the bullying? And he said, I'll tell you what happened. I was telling him a story, and he put both his fingers in his ears. It's like this now. By the way, your dad gets tuned out. You have no idea the kind of bullying that takes place on a regular basis with me. I mean, no fingers in the ears, but the emotional fingers in the ears. It's just the insane tuning out. I mean, come on. Yeah, I'm aware of what's going on. But
what'd you say?
Putting fingers in the ears is now that constitutes bullying. And then he paused and he went, well, he also hit me in the penis. And I went, now we got something. Then I thought this
I
kid.
I like that he followed with
he
that.
He followed with that.
Yeah.
He was setting the table. You know what I mean? He was setting the table with that. And
right.
then he
getting
just.
Getting your interest.
But the one he.
Misdirection.
One that went off the wall in the power alley, that was the punch in the junk.
He's going to be a good negotiator someday.
Well, but listen, you don't start off with your best joke, you know?
Right.
You set the table and then
set
you come
up.
To. You
he had
set
to take
him up.
The temperature.
Right. So I was
he
like.
He rope-a-doped you.
He punched you in the penis. Well, he hit me. I don't know. My son's got. He claimed I hit him in the ding-a-ling when I was teaching him how to box the other day. And, he's learning how to box. I got him in on the heavy bag. I got him in his stance. I may have brushed it. I got him in on the stance. I got him throwing the punches and doing the whole 9 yards. But I said, well, I'm just going to have to make you a little better boxer in Casey. And he's like, I can't punch him. I was like, well, if he picks on you, well, no, then I'll get into trouble. They have this stuff so carved into these kids' minds by the first grade. Like, there is no more that, you know, I mean, every third sitcom and after school special and everything was about, I mean, it's the Karate Kid story. It's he's getting picked on, so he learns how to, you know, it's the Atlas thing in the back of the Spider-Man comic book. Like, he gets sand kicked on him, but then he starts working out. Now he's kicking there's no more now he's working out.
Mm-mm.
There's just he's going to the principal. It'd be super boring for the comic books, wouldn't it be? And at the end of Karate Kid, by the way, 2 minutes into Act One, he ratted out the Cobra Kai gym to one of the principals, and they all got busted.
Yeah, instead of sweep the leg, it's like fill out a form.
Turn
Johnny.
Right. And that'd be the
you
end
got a
of
problem with that.
That'd be the end of the whole thing. All right, so fingers in the ears, which I liked was bowling, but on the flick of the bick, evidently not a good thing. Something I was thinking about, our dog's getting a little bit old, and, you know, we've been kind of talking about that. Maybe we'll get a little puppy dog in here and get Molly. And then I realized, you know, you have to sell it to Molly as, hey, we got you a playmate, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But then I just want to say this to all the dogs that are listening. When you're having difficulty getting up on the bed and you're 11 and a half, so you're 88 years old or whatever you are, and you got a little hip dysplasia and you can't see out of one eye, and somebody shows up and goes, we got you a playmate. That means you're dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, for the dog, it's got to be, you got me a playmate now? I can't move. What happened to something I could fuck 5 years ago? Now you got me a playmate? This is bullshit. I'm being replaced.
Yeah.
That's what's going. This is fresh blood.
What would the puppy's name be?
I would not get a puppy. I had a conversation with, well, first off, every time I talk to Mike August, I hear this dog like bellowing in the back. And
Mike August has a dog?
Mike August has a dog. Well, he got married, so he's got to get the dog. Oh. He gets married, he's got the dog. And then like a lot of like, hey, don't chew the curtain. You know, it's like, and it, like, I've had that thing with the puppy where they go, everyone's got this thing where you put him in the crate. Now get something,
right.
And have these things.
Training.
Have these things that make sense, you know, where they go. Get something that reminds them of you. Something with your smell on it, like a slipper, something. Something they've already chewed on, but it's got your scent on it.
Get a T-shirt and put it in your hamper.
Right.
Rub it all over
yeah.
your body,
and
then
put it in the crate, and then that'll calm them because they're like. And then you, what you do is you have to turn a radio on in the room, like a little talk radio. And then smash cut to you in bed rolling over. Oh! And you're like, I want to fucking backhand that bitch who told me this advice. You should just do that with everyone who gives you advice about dogs. Like where they go, if you want them to stop peeing where they're peeing, put a little white vinegar on that spot and then take a piece of thing and then put it. You should just backhand them and just be a liar.
Yeah.
It's never going to work because you go home bursting with confidence
right.
and enthusiasm. Well, okay, I just got to get a T-shirt, put it in the crate, and I'll put a little AM radio on. No. That night, still crying, still pawing. And I've done that thing where it's like you put them in the crate. And you lay in bed and you go, okay, it's been 20 minutes. They're going to fall asleep. Like they cannot keep this up the entire – oh, yes, they can. Oh, yes, they fucking can.
They have crazy puppy energy. You know who else's puppy I think is a terror is Dr. Drew's dog.
Yes.
Because I follow his wife on Instagram.
They
and
chew
just,
everything.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. It's not quite as cool. Get the one-year-old.
See, I was just today I was looking at Pet Finder. I thought, I'm going to kill 5 hours. So I was looking at Pet Finder, And
right. Turned into seven, but go ahead.
Yeah. I was thinking, there's so many adult or one-year-old, they call one-year-old baby, which I don't think so. That's a seven-year-old in dog
right.
years. Mm-hmm. But there's so many of those dogs, and there's just not that many true puppies. And I was thinking I should really just, if I'm going to get a dog, I should really get an older one. But God, I want the puppy.
I know. But you want the puppy.
Because it's so cute.
I must tell you this. I had the puppy. I had the German Shepherd puppy. She yelped. She chewed. She chewed and she yelped. She knocked over the barrier thing. She jumped over the barrier thing. She pissed and shit everywhere.
And then she died.
Chewed and then she died.
You showed her.
Yeah. So then Molly Girl came into my life, like 1 year old, knew her name, pissed and shit outside, gave her the, literally, you could leave. If you had slippers that were made of jerky.
I do.
And I don't know why, because you'd probably be attacked by coyotes when you got the newspaper. But if you had jerky-based slippers, you could, and a hat that was made of giblets, and leave them.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a Jewish curse. You should wear a hat made of giblets and run through a cave filled with crows.
Yeah. Your ears should be replaced with chicken livers.
So, you're allergic to Jewisms?
I must be.
So, my dog, Molly, if you left slippers that were made of Slim Jims out, would sniff it and never chew it. Like, literally, and if you're sitting at the table and you gave her a scrap, she'd, like, take it very gently in her gum and make sure it's, like, gentle, didn't piss inside, didn't shit inside. Would have those days when it's like, oh, she got locked in for, you know, 14 hours and no one was here, and I thought you were coming home. No, I was going straight to work and just sat there having to piss, but never doing it.
Like, possibly she used the toilet.
Possibly. Possibly, yeah. I swear that seat was up when I left. Either way. When you experience that versus the crate, the crying, and the chewing, you will almost immediately be over the novelty
of the cuteness.
Of the cuteness.
How long does the it's awful but cute phase last?
When they're a puppy? Somewhere around night two, when you want to either put them into a water balloon launcher and just fire them into the nearest yard or against the closest brick wall. Or when you just want to take a nine iron and put them out in the backyard and just try to launch them into the alley. The cuteness, when the sleep deprivation trumps all cuteness. I mean,
does
like
this go for humans too?
Yes, you could have the fucking. I could be dating a drunken Scarlett Johansson who just wanted to fuck and talk about my girth would be annoying. Did you know something I don't know? Or
No,
I just made that up. Okay. I would get at night number two, I'd be annoyed.
She's been tweeting about it.
I'd be, okay, that's yeah. What I was saying. I'd just be like, sweetie, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I don't want to talk about my girth anymore. I'm fucking exhausted. Get your tits out of my face. I want to go to bed. Like, let's face it. Sleep just takes the fucking top pyramid block. And it only takes three nights of no sleep before you start looking at that dog as a little pain in the ass, little devil dog hound from hell. That's right. I watched a lot of TV specials in the 80s and late 70s.
Did you ever have a pound puppy? The stuffed animal.
Oh, no.
Remember those?
No.
Sort of short-lived, like, giant beanie babies.
Yeah, I had friends who had those.
Yeah, sure. Friends.
I had a friend who had Digger the dog. That's as close as I got. Digger the dog, Digger, he goes with you when you explore. That's where, like, Leon Redbone would sing the song.
He sang the Mr. Belvedere theme song, I believe.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find the Digger the dog. Digger the dog, Digger, he goes with you when you explore.
Yes,
just
his legs would move
and
when
go
you
go for a dog. I'd love
I had there. That.
Oh, right, we have
very
it.
Excited. Great. Ass catches him.
I will have it in a second, but I swear to God, if I try to give... All right, let's hear
where
if we can...
Where you going, Tony? Look at Digger, Mike.
Digger the dog, Digger, he goes with you when you explore. Just pull his leash and go for a walk. He's your dog for sure.
What's your dog's name?
Digger! Digger the dog,
what's your dog's
Digger,
name?
He goes with you when you explore. Like.
Why, you white male man?
Go for a walk, he's your dog for sure.
Digger the dog, when you pull his string, he walks 5 feet from romper room.
cold, hard, molded plastic. Very unsatisfying if what you want is an actual dog.
A whole 60 inches worth of movement on his own?
We got to get that to Kimmel for unnecessary censorship.
Yeah.
Drop a little bleep in there.
Yeah. Walking. If I gave my kids that for a toy, they'd be like, fuck off, old man.
Yeah.
I'll choke you out with his leash.
They're like, it's not even a remote control.
There's nothing here. Where's it plug in? Where's it charge? Where's the batteries? Where's the solar panel?
Why is this it wearing a hat?
Blows ass. Yeah, it's a weird dog. It was like a sort of detective dog, except for...
Mm-hmm, like Arthur.
I don't know what you were doing exactly.
It was a bloodhound.
Digger the dog. Digger he goes. And it's also... Yeah, that's what kids from the 70s really respond to, 20s crooner music.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was hot. I didn't have one, of course, because I had a fundamental problem with toys, which is my mom would buy nothing that was new. It all had to be weird shit that smelled funny and had other people's funk on it from the Salvation Army or whatever it is. So, like, Digger the dog would have been cool when I was six, but we didn't buy new shit, so we'd see Digger the dog in the thrift store, but I was 12, no longer in my Digger the dog phase.
Right, you outgrown it.
But now I wanted a go-kart, but there are no new go-karts. We had to wait. So there was a weird math thing. It was always too far. By the time it made it to the thrift store, I was too old for it.
I suspect if you ever got a toy that it was lead paint-based.
Mm-hmm. They made sure. My mom would always ask that.
Yeah.
All right. So, again, you want a dog that is, a teenager or, you know, 1 year old, something like that. Don't the crate dog get Digger, love Digger, but don't get into that. Don't get into the crating and the biting and here's the thing. I shit you not. As a single dude.
Don't shit us.
I will not. Not. This is not shit. This is shit not.
We'll see.
As a single dude who was living alone in the hills of Hollywood in his freshly minted house from 1923 where I redid the floors and I've got all new carpet and all that kind of shit, having one German Shepherd puppy was a much bigger hassle than having twins.
Wow.
Much bigger hassle than having twins. Now, I've thrown money at the problem. I have, you know, nannies and wives and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you know, I got it worked out. But just living alone with the fucking dog in the crate, much bigger pain in the ass than the twins. I mean, you know what I mean? It's a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
Where was I? All right. Let's hear. I should tell you before Graham Parker comes in here that. So here it was, 1979, 1980. I'm going to North Hollywood High, and there's a radio station called K-Rock that I would one day end up on, which is that much more bizarre. And while everyone else is around the country listening to, like, REO Speedwagon and Styx, Mr. Roboto, and, like, a lot of 38 Special and, you know, bands like that, I'm listening to, like, the Talking Heads and the Blondie and Graham Parker and... you know, Elvis Costello and stuff. So this is one station that's playing these songs. And I hear this Graham Parker song called, let me play either one you want, but the first one. And it doesn't sound like the songs I'm used to hearing because it's like Van Halen and stuff is what I'm used to hearing. And I'm like, what is this song? It's a happy song. And I was in a good mood then because I was in high school playing football and doing stuff.
Someone call me from across the ocean to find a weak link in my devotion. They can shoot hot knives or down the line. I just slam it down every time.
Love when the piano comes in.
I got the telephone jammed in my ear. They're still talking, but I don't hear. I don't defend when my heart starts to attack.
Pot it down a little. So I'm like, wow, who is this dude? I've never heard this dude before. And then I find out it's Graham Parker. And then I find out my friend Alex has a Graham Parker record. And it's like, it was a big deal. Because that was like, at my house, a record was considered a durable good. Like, that was a big ticket item.
Who made that for you?
What library did that come from would be the more important question. My dad would get records from the library. how uncommitted to supporting your artist must you be? And how little is your time worth where you're fucking... And these things look like the fucking sands of the Sahara, like just the dunes. They were just swept. They look like abalone shells, like you know, huge clam shells, you know, just that big wave in them.
Like ribbon candy.
Yeah, they get left out in the sun and they just go like... It was like a fucking the perfect storm when that goddamn needle would go on there. And my dad... And so I saved up my money.
Did you ever have an embarrassing reveal where you're like, this album's cool, let me know when you return this to the library, I'm going to get next. Like,
I just remember the super pathetic, like... The picture on all the record covers that my dad would get from that library wouldn't be Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass or whatever. It'd just be the standard one, which was a record, and it was looking up at the sun, and it had like a frowny face, you know? And it's like, Jesus Christ, old man, you're 43.
The sticker cousin of Be Kind, Rewind.
Right. When you fucking break down and buy yourself a record. I like when people do this. Well, what if I don't like it? Well, look, you know you like the artist, right? Yeah. And you know you like the one song you heard on the radio. It's $6.99. How badly could you get burned if you didn't like... Although, let's say you just like one other song on the record.
In those days, money.
Yeah, I know. So I'm like, oh, man. So I save up and I get me a Graham Parker record, and it's called The Up Escalator. Graham is here, and I'm excited. All right, so I go to my buddy Alex's house, and he's got another Graham Parker record that I didn't even know about. That's right. This one's called Squeezing Out Sparks, very critically acclaimed, and it's got a little rock and roll song called Saturday Night is Dead. And I was like, ooh, let me hear this. Now, this is from 1979. And it's so, like, British and European and un-North Hollywood and exotic. Yeah. Doesn't sound like Molly Hatchet. Cut it down just a little bit. So I'm like, man, I love this Graham Parker cat. And we went and saw him at the Greek, like I said, with John Hyde opening for him. Saw him do an acoustic show.
Did you know about John Hyde at that point, or is this just like a pleasant surprise?
I did know about John Hyde. I didn't know the breadth and width of John Hyde, because John Hyde was kind of just getting started. And he didn't have all his albums. He had a couple albums. Graham Parker was probably about five albums into his career. John was probably two or three into his career. But I knew I liked them both. And it was a perfect marriage. And it was really the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup of concerts for me. Because it was like, you're taking the two guys I dig and you're putting them together at the same time. All right, let's listen to a little guitar. Turn up. All right, we should... Why don't you give me a little... Pot it down a little. I'll hit it a little bit under, go to my PC, and then we'll go get Graham Parker. Yeah, a little more. I need a little more.
Did you ever play in a band, Adam?
No.
You never played an instrument or anything?
Never.
You and Jimmy were in Korn.
Oh, me and Jimmy were in Korn for a while. I forgot about that. You can probably go to YouTube and see me and Jimmy in the band Korn.
The man show bit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Little behind the music. No, I loved music. I never had the discipline to ever learn an instrument, and I can't sing. Other than that, I'm your man. there's me and Jimmy when we were in Korn. Yeah. Yeah, I would have loved to be in a band. Hey, you know what? Let me give a little love.
I'm surprised you never picked up, like, tried to play the guitar or bass. Or
I don't have any discipline.
Triangle.
I have a ton of discipline, but I don't have, like, sit-around discipline. I have punch-a-heavy-bag discipline.
Drums.
Oh, that's what I should have done. But you also understand, that would have required like a kit and a place, and there was apartments, and it just go to my PC. That's right. Business people, you're using your tablets, right? And we've decided, people keep retweeting me this, that the tablet, simultaneously the newest and oldest thing on the planet. Cannot find anything older and newer than the tablet. Smartphones, huh? Well, those are new. You want to get some business done? I would suggest go to my PC. Use the app brought to you by Citrix. You can put it on your iPad, your iPhone, your Android, Kindle Fire, whatever you like. And it goes right to your computer. Access any program, and you can edit and save and do whatever you want. Go to my PC free. Try it for free. 45 days free. That's right. Free trial. Only if you use the promo code Adam. Visit gotomypc.com. Click on the try it free button. And remember to use the promo code Adam. All right. Do we have me and Korn, by the way? I could play a little behind the music of, I think it'll work without the visuals, but it might play a little when we're in Korn. I was friends with those guys.
Korn, their legion of fans know them as hard-edged rock music visionaries. But what they don't know is this seemingly invincible band was nearly torn apart by the two members who helped bring them together. Tonight, Korn, the story beneath the music. Our story begins with Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel, two wide-eyed, idealistic sophomores from Bakersfield High.
Believe it or not, when we were in high school, we didn't get a lot of girls.
It's true. I can't explain it, but we didn't.
No, and there were these guys in school, and they had a band, and you know, we figured if we got in the band, it'd be good for the chicks. You know, they'd flock to us like mice on
tuna.
On tuna, yeah.
The guys in the band, they were huge fans of our music.
I guess they knew we had something special to contribute.
Adam's dad had a van, and we had a lot of equipment to carry. And Jimmy? Well, Jimmy.
We were pretty high.
But the combination of the band's talent and Adam's dad letting them use his van worked. They started small. High school dances, pep rallies, bar mitzvahs, and eventually grew to concert halls, arenas, and bar mitzvahs. Together they took the music industry by storm. Rock radio caught on, and soon sold-out concerts turned into massive hit singles, millions of albums, and thousands of adoring fans. But Adam, and especially Jimmy, did not handle success well.
We wrote the song Freak on a Leash one night after Jimmy. Well, let's just say he was tripping pretty hard.
Either he was on drugs or ate some spoiled bologna or something. I'm not sure, but he was out of it.
He thought he was a dog. He was running around the dressing room, biting people, humping legs. I mean, all kinds of crazy shit. It was just too much. And then he started peeing. Not just in his pants, everywhere, the dressing room. And that was the end of it. That was like, that closed the coffin, so.
The band tried to keep their problems private, but somehow the news leaked.
I called this press conference tonight to announce that Jimmy peed all over the rest of the band. Any questions?
The media had a field day. On October 22nd, 1995, Korn decided to part ways with Carolla and Kimmel forever.
Adam's dad sold van, and I think we knew it was time to end it.
It's Jonathan.
We left them.
We had a lot of new ideas, and quite frankly, those guys were holding us back.
While Korn went on to become one of the world's most popular bands, Adam and Jimmy quickly sank into cable television obscurity.
I don't know whatever happened to those guys. Last I heard, they were doing some show about farting.
Carolla and Kimmel, Korn's forgotten foot soldiers, faded from the public's memory, but a part of rock and roll history forever.
The rented banjo I shot. They're doing a show about farting. I think most people I know would have summed up the man show that way, too.
A great show about farting.
A great show about farting. But that's why whenever you get all these reviews or whatever, they go, you know, the Neanderthal doing the show about the beer chugging. Like, I just tell, most bits were this. They weren't nothing to do with chicks or beer. It was mainly all the bits were these kind of bits.
Clever and poking fun at yourself.
Yeah, we were always the butt of the joke, and then it was something to do other than it was me going out and trying out for the Raiders and getting my ass kicked. But it was never me making the team. It was never. I tried to tell someone the other day, you were there, Bald Brian. I don't like to talk about myself on this program.
Do it just once, please, for the listener, for Graham.
Okay, because we're going to go get Graham Parker in a second. We tried out for the Dodgers. And it was nonstop Tommy Lasorda cussing at us, going, you make me sick. You're disgracing the uniform. Take that uniform off. You guys are pathetic. I've never seen so many pathetic. Spring training. We're trying out in Vero Beach. And it was, you're pathetic and you stink. And that's the way we had it. And it was fine. Then he did my radio show 5 years later. And he said, you know what, Adam, if I got hold of you at 18, you could have made it. You could have made it. I would have thrown you 100 curveballs a day and you would have made it. And I was like, God, Tommy, come on, seriously? He's like, absolutely, you could have made it. Meaning, he thought we were pretty good, but we only filmed him telling us how much we sucked because it's not funny for Tommy to sort of go, you're pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's much funnier for him to go, you suck, you've disgraced the Dodger organization, take those uniforms off, you don't deserve to wear them. And that's where the joke was. And we always knew it, but I don't know why the show got spun into us making fun of women constantly. It was us making fun of ourselves.
I feel like people who don't
understand.
Well, they don't understand the nuances of humor either.
And they don't.
So to them, they don't see what's in the quotes. You know,
right? And they don't understand that making the team or having Tom Lasorda say we're great or having
they just
Jonathan
think it's jokes about baseball. Like they're not going
to
get it.
Right? They don't realize that us going to wrestling camp means we have to get our ass kicked and we have to get embarrassed. That's what's funny. Being good wrestlers, not funny.
Also, the promos, at least for the first year, were exclusively, you know, girls
chicks
jumping
on trampolines.
Yes, and I think people judge, you know.
Comedy Central. All right. The great Graham Parker. Yeah. 32 years in the making. I've been wanting to meet Graham Parker for 32 years. And we'll bring him in next.
As Allison and Brian anticipating Graham Parker back in 2012. Listen tomorrow to hear Graham Parker's appearance. And I remember that was a really fun episode because he used my guitar to play some music. Or at least he picked it up and played with it and then made fun of the guitar that I had. But it was totally...
What was he making totally fun valid. Of specifically?
Well, it was a brand called Ovation. So they kind of have these weird fiberglass backs that that famously just... they're really hard to play sitting down. And they just slide right off your leg. So, he was laughing about that. But brilliant musician, super nice dude. And, really happy to get him in studio and hanging with Adam. All right.
It's so weird that you're like, you know, you are a musician. You are, you do the same thing. You're like a colleague or a peer of these people. But they're like legends. And you work on this comedy show. But you've met all these musical legends that I don't think you would have ever had the chance to meet in your entire life. Even if you toured with like on the road with various bands, there's no way you would have met all these people.
Yeah, I always appreciate the fact that
even if you were like a regular music podcast, you probably wouldn't meet them. They'd like do phoners at best.
Yeah,
it's crazy how much like a comedy show has led to this.
You're exactly right. It's an odd path to get to where I got, but I'll take it. All right, that'll do it for
you've been insulted by like all your favorite artists.
I know. I welcome it gladly. All right, stick around. Part 2 coming up next.